Hi, everybody. I'm Beattie Cohn-Reddos, and welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. You know, every single week when I listen to the Beatles song, it's a real, real reminder for me, and hopefully for you as well, that we all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And ups and downs, my friends, they're normal. We all get depressed, and we get sad, and we get angry. And we get upset, and sometimes we just have a loss of energy and we're not sleeping. But the thing that we really need to remember, it is the patterns of behavior that begin to really interfere with our lives and our relationships. That is the time when we all need to seriously think about reaching out and asking for help and trying to really understand what is the depression all about that doesn't seem to really ever really lift, maybe for a day or two. Or what about the anxiety? I mean, in the United States right now, we have 16 million adults, all right, who are suffering from clinical depression. That translates into 1 in 5 Americans. And if we're looking at anxiety disorders, 40 million adults are suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders, including panic attacks. And again, I really want to underscore the fact that there is no one, not therapists, that doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor or black or white or gay or straight or trans or Jewish or Christian or Muslim, that life sometimes really can feel like a roller coaster ride. So don't panic if you're having a few bad days, but if those few bad days become few more bad weeks and months, and for some people years, that is the time that you really do need to give yourself permission. It's really, really okay to get a second opinion. And when people come into therapy, I think that there is a concern that, oh my goodness, I've called a therapist and I'm going to end up being in therapy for years and years. And that's not the case at all for the majority of people. And when you're seeking out therapy, you want to make sure that you find a competent therapist. And that does not mean going to the internet and looking at the reviews and looking at the likes, but really getting a good referral from somebody that you trust. Because when we're looking at mental health in this country, I mean, the suicide attempts by young people quadrupled over the past 6 years, you know, with all in quotes, the connection on the internet. I think that kids are having a really, really difficult time with bullying and shaming. And I saw a young girl last week and she was saying that, you know, she sleeps with her phone because she really wants to know before the morning whether or not she's going to be invited to the party. So that things are moving along so quickly. And I think one of the real goals for all of us is to find a way to slow things down in our lives. You know, and I find having a beginning of the day and an ending of the day where you can walk, where you can converse, where you can exercise, where you can literally throw away your phones and turn off the computers and just kind of find a way every single day to de-stress, because there's so much going on with the political situation in this country, which is nerve-wracking to say the least for certainly the majority of people. So I think that every day, as I say to my patients, every single session when they are leaving my office, is that we need to monitor ourselves and we need to be mindful of doing the things throughout our days, our behaviors, our interactions with people that are really in our best interest. And that's kind of a test that I give everybody to sort of look the kinds of people who they're interacting with. The job that they have, is it something that they're just really going through the motions because they may have been in a job for a number of years? But perhaps it's time to look at some other options. But of course, for us to be able to do this, we really need to slow down and we need to stop, and we need to be really honest with ourselves and look at the quality of our lives and look at the quality of our relationships and make some decisions with or without help, whether or not we need some modifications, whether or not we need some changes, even though that may not be a popular decision, according to friends and family, so that you're really living your life being true to yourself. And I think that when we live a life where we are true to ourselves, we're able to navigate ups and downs much, much better than if we're living a life for other people, for someone else, and where for the most part, we are living on a roller coaster ride or a merry-go-round ride and not a fun, fun ride that is really wearing us down physically and emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically as well. You know, you look at the suicide statistics here, and this was a statistic that I've talked about before, very, very concerning, where you have the rate amongst children 10 years of age to 24 has increased by 56%. And you have to wonder, what is going on with the kids of 10 and 12? Is it the bullying? Is it the shaming? Is it the fact that they are feeling more and more alienated, despite the fact that they're probably more connected to their phones and to their computers than ever before? And if we're looking at, because we're going to be talking about domestic violence today, but if we're looking at the homicide rate by so-called, and I say so-called, intimate partners, it has increased by 26% from 2010 to 2017. And every day, again, preparing for today's show, because I have a terrific, terrific guest who you've all heard about, Denise Brown, Nicole Brown Simpson's sister, who is going to be talking with me in a few minutes. I mean, we were discussing this on the phone a couple of weeks ago. Four women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. We're looking at divorce rates in this country, 48% for first marriages, 67% for second marriages, 74% for third marriages. So people are really having a really, really tough time in all kinds of ways, politically and financially and sexually and in their relationships. And, you know, what I have found as a therapist is that we really need to try to rule out our old unfinished business, what I call our skeletons in the closet, as best as we possibly can. Things that are really stemming from our own families of origin, including abuse of various different kinds, sexual abuse, sexual assault, verbal abuse, physical and emotional abuse. And I think it's really easy to say, oh, well, what happened, happened, and we are in the moment, and we should be able to live in the moment. And again, yes, we can live in the moment, but what I have found is that those old issues, now, none of us are ever going to be able to change what did and did not happen in our history. But what I have found is that with really good therapy that does not need to last years and years and years, people are able to really emotionally work through what did and did not happen in their previous lives, so that they're able, maybe for the first time in their life, to be able to live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And I mean, I'm a believer, of course, in meditation and yoga and exercise, but there's sometimes for many, many people, and I would say for most of us, that we have to be able to find a way to talk about our pain, to talk about our insecurities, to talk about what did and did not happen at earlier times in our lives. And it's very, very cathartic. And I think that we don't encourage people enough to express themselves emotionally. You know, the old stiff upper lip. And people can try and avoid and deny and sublimate and say that everything is fine and say yes when they mean no and no when they mean yes. But the fact is that it really, really does catch up with us. So that if you are at a place in your life and you're feeling, you know, really out of control, not necessarily suicidal, not necessarily that you really don't want to go on anymore, but if you're really finding that you are kind of going around in circles, you really need to give yourself permission to reach out and ask for help. And it really can. It can make all the difference in the world. Well, as I mentioned today, we are going to be talking about domestic violence. And I am so, so honored to have Denise Brown as my guest. Welcome, Denise.
Speedy, how are you?
I'm fine. You're in warm California, and it's actually a beautiful day here in New York. I'm so glad, seriously, that you were able to take the time and talk. And of course, people need to know a little bit about your history if they don't already know that Denise is a former Ford model who became...
Oh, God.
Yes. It was a few years ago, but...
BD, that was many, many moons ago, I'll tell you. You know, that's a part of my life that I absolutely loved, absolutely enjoyed. I got to travel. I got to see the world. But it's something that happened so long ago that, you know, when people mention it, I sit there and I go, wow, I did do that, didn't I?
You sure did. And since then, look at what you've done. I mean, and certainly not by choice. I mean, you became an activist against domestic violence after the brutal murder of your sister, I mean, Nicole Brown Simpson and Round Goldman. And I was looking at the dates, Denise, 26 years, June the 12th, 1994.
Exactly. I know, isn't it crazy? And now all
it
of
is.
A sudden we're looking at the Violence Against Women Act that stalled again.
Yes.
You know, I mean, they haven't, it's just so crazy that when literally 26 years ago, 25 years ago, we started the foundation.
Right.
Nicole Brown, it was called the Nicole Brown Simpson Charitable Foundation at the time. Then a few years later, we removed Simpson. So it was Nicole Brown Charitable Foundation,
right.
And then it just became the Nicole Brown Foundation. But in the process of all of that, in starting the foundation, I really, really believed in my heart that when we start this foundation, because of such the high profile of everything, that domestic violence would no longer exist.
Huh.
That's how I knew nothing about domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, you know, as I was on the metro coming to the studio, I wanted to ask you something. And did you know when your sister was married to OJ that she was living in an abusive relationship?
I did not.
You did not know?
No. And that's the thing that was so crazy when we found out that it was, because there was a congresswoman here in California,
mm-hmm.
and she told me, because I was the first one to come out and say, no, my sister's not a battered woman.
Really?
No, it was impossible because we were that close, and
yes.
we talked about everything.
Uh-huh.
BD, this is how much of a secret and how ashamed a lot of victims are.
Absolutely.
And they don't want to talk about it.
Absolutely.
So, my sister and I, we were so close, less than 2 years apart in age, but yet this was something she did not want to talk about. It even went as far as me finding a picture. Remember the Polaroid picture?
I certainly do.
Okay. The Polaroid in her bathroom drawer, and I picked it up and I looked at it, and it was a picture that they found in the P.O. box, in her, P.O. box at the time of the trial. And it was her very young with a black eye. I picked up that picture and I looked at it and I said, oh my God. I said, Nicole, I said, what happened? She goes, didn't they do a great job? I said,
wow.
Excuse me?
Wow.
She said, because he was working at the studio doing a movie, and she says, didn't they do a great job of painting a black eye on me? And I said, oh my God, this looks so real.
And you bought the story. You bought the story.
Of course I did. Uh-huh. We weren't raised in a domestic violence household. We had no violence. I never even heard my parents screaming at each other.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I took the picture and I threw it right back in the drawer. I said, you know, so that's when I said, no, my sister's not a battered woman, because that would have given her the perfect opportunity to tell me that something was wrong, because we spoke about everything.
You did.
Well,
and when you looked at their relationship over the years, did you ever wonder the way he talked to her, the way he behaved? I mean, did you ever
honestly,
have...
I thought he was an asshole. I thought he, excuse my language, but I mean, literally, I thought, how can you talk to somebody the way you talk to them and turn around and say you love them? Okay, so me, not knowing anything about domestic violence,
right,
not being raised in a domestic violence household, not understanding what domestic violence was at all until Nicole's murder, until we went to a shelter that was after her murder, took her notes and diaries, and I said, what is this all about?
Uh-huh.
And that started my education. It was after her murder.
So yes, she kept a diary. She kept a diary of what was going on.
She kept a diary. Yeah, but we found that after her murder.
Uh-huh. And look at what you've been doing over all of these years. And you know, you and I were talking on the phone. I mean, look, the statistics, the domestic violence statistics continue to soar. And
oh, they do.
So what do you make about all of this? I mean, there's books, there's talks, there's programs. I have my own theories about all of this. What are your thoughts about why we have really not been able to make a dent in this epidemic? And it is.
It is. And I think what happens is a lot of times, I mean, this happened to us. Okay, this is firsthand experience.
Right.
One of my CEO, well, she was the chairman of the board at the foundation. She went to an event up in Los Angeles. And she started talking about the Nicole Brown Foundation. She started talking about domestic violence. And a guy turned around to her and said, why would I give you any money for any kind of programs that you guys are doing when domestic violence will never stop?
Mm-hmm.
She was stunned. She was mortified. She goes, what are you talking about? She says, if we work together, why do you believe this? Because women go back. She says, yes, but you don't understand why they go back. Their lives are threatened. Their children's lives are threatened. This is a worldwide epidemic that is going on. And if everybody thought like you, everybody would be dead if they were in a situation like this.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just mortified that somebody would even say, well, it's never going to end. And it was like, oh my God.
Well, I think we continue to really miss the boat. And for me, I mean, I have a program, Stop Domestic Violence Before It Starts, Never Make a Mistake in Love Again. I mean, I think that people are really, for the most part, rich, poor, black, white, educated, not educated, I think are really unaware of the ingredients that truly need to be present in a healthy long-term relationship. And people do not know how to assess. This is what my research was about. This is what my book is about. How to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And of course, my research found that it takes close to a year and not 2 weeks and not 90 days to really find out who somebody is and isn't, you know, to go through the four seasons, because there are going to be signs. There's going to be something. I don't like the way you're talking to me. I feel that you're too possessive. I feel this. I feel that. And yet we come into this whole world of domestic violence after the fact. I mean, do you agree?
I do. The only thing that I would say is I truly believe that people can act for 1 year. I think it takes longer. I think that if you are actually dating a narcissist, somebody that is an abuser, I think that they can act for a little longer. Yes, little signs will come out. You have to know what those signs are. You have to know those red flags.
Exactly.
You have to know that if somebody tells you, oh my God, why are you wearing such a short skirt? Do you want to have somebody else pick you up? Why are you wearing that colored lipstick? You're looking kind of whorish.
Yes.
I mean, you know, little things like that. Those are just like, oh, you know, in the past people would say, and now, oh God, he really does care how I look. He really does,
yes,
you know, love me. And no, those are not things. When people call you, you know, you look kind of whorish, that's not a loving statement.
No,
you know,
it's an abusive
saying. Could you please change the color of lipstick you're wearing, you know, because it really isn't appropriate, maybe for the event that we're going to.
Exactly.
You can say it in so many other ways, but once they start name calling, once they start saying, you know, accusing you of possibly wanting another relationship, they start accusing you of, why are you talking with this guy? And you see all these jealousies come out of this person that was never jealous before. But all of a sudden, these little innuendos, these little things start coming out in this person. Open up your eyes.
Well, exactly. And this is where, you know, for me, each of us has to be in a really good place ourselves, emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically, so that we're not entering into relationships, you know, where we're needy and depressed and we want to be saved and we're going to look the other way. Because all of these things, as you say, they're behaviors, they're red flags. And yet we do, because we don't want to be alone and because we want to be in love and we want to be married. And I see this with so many of my patients. Will look the other way and and end up in tragic situations, you know, around the country.
Financially, though, let's also talk about that one.
Yes.
Because you like your 15,000 square foot home. Because
right.
It doesn't just happen to the poor and the homeless.
Right.
You like that 15,000 square foot home. You like driving your Bentley or your Rolls Royce.
Right.
You enjoy the vacations, the private planes, all that kind of stuff. But let me tell you, domestic violence can happen in those situations as well.
Absolutely.
It's not just geared towards homeless and poor people. And, you know, when I first started talking about this, people used to say, don't talk about men. I go, why not?
Mm-hmm.
I said, if men are doing 90%, I mean, at the time, 95, 90, whatever the percentage is, if they're doing a majority of the abusing, why don't they need help? Why do we not talk about them as well? Well, that has changed over the years, thank goodness. Because, you know, they need to be held accountable for their actions.
Well, I was reading a study over the weekend, kind of a depressing study, which I'm going to share with you in the audience. It says they were talking about men and getting help. So it says, according to this researcher, there's just one problem. According to researchers who study the issue of domestic violence, no one knows what works. Nearly a half century after the women's movement called attention to intimate partner violence, there is no consensus around why it happens, let alone how to prevent it. Some programs have been shown to change the way men view women, but few, if any, have proven to change abusive behavior, and none have been shown to work in hard cases or over the long term. I mean, that
Isn't that sad?
Yes.
Isn't that sad? Because you know what? It's really interesting. Okay, domestic violence is power and control.
Right.
It is someone wanting control over you, over your being, over your body, over your everything that you are, they want control of.
Right.
Okay? If you are the type of woman that wants to be controlled and told exactly what to wear, when to do something, when to go to the bathroom, when to brush your teeth, when to do this, when to do that, then that's the type of relationship for you. But I don't believe, not for one second, that anybody wants to be controlled like this. Nobody. So, yes, looking out, dating somebody for a year, 2 years, 3 years before you jump into a marriage, before you jump into something that you don't know, you know, a lot of times also culture plays a role in this where they say, okay, it's better getting married to somebody else that I really don't know than to be staying at home because they're living in an abusive situation at home.
Exactly.
So there really is a lot of ugly when it comes to domestic violence.
What are you finding program-wise around the country? I mean, when I have been looking into the different domestic violence programs, again, they're all crisis intervention. There's very little preventative relationship education that I have found in the country. I mean, are you seeing the same thing? Have you discovered programs that seem to be working, that seem to be viable, that are being funded properly?
Funding. Yeah, let's go back to that that word funding.
Yes.
I wish, you know, I mean, because for me, everything stems from the top.
Right.
Okay. When our government decides that they want to cut funding for the Violence Against Women Act, they want to cut funding because, you know, due to, they have funds. They have funds for everything else.
They certainly do.
Why don't they have funds for the women? Why don't they have funds for the shelters? Why don't they have funds for the law enforcement that enforce the actions of these perpetrators? Why don't they fund everything that the Violence Against Women Act funds should be funded with? It should be a no-brainer to be funded. Okay? For me, women make up half of what this world is. I mean, what's the percentage of men and women? 50-50?
Right.
So what do you want to do? Get rid of all the women? Do you want more murders to happen because of domestic violence, because you're not implementing the Violence Against Women Act, or, you know, you don't want a program in your community because of lack of funds? I mean, for me, money is like, I mean, do you know where domestic violence even started? It started in somebody's house because they wanted to help. Now we have these homes and these shelters and these safe havens where women and children can go to be safe. You know what I hear from these women? Why is it that we have to leave? Why doesn't the guy that abuses me have to leave my house?
Well, exactly. In fact, in reading about the research about men and how none of these programs seem to be really all that helpful, the researchers were talking about thousands of court-mandated counseling programs have sprung up to treat convicted batterers. But, like addicts in rehab, they are asked to take responsibility for their actions. And like addicts in rehab, the vast majority drop out or relapse. And there doesn't seem to be a legal mandate from the courts to say you need to be in a program for 1 or 2 years or whatever. So,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
go ahead.
When it comes to batterer treatment programs, I know of one that worked, that tracked the victim and the family. If they did get back together, they tracked the perpetrator for 2 years after they got out of the program. I met one of those perpetrators, and they had not reoffended, and it was a couple of years after they had gone in the program. Well, unfortunately, this program was in Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And it was run by a man by the name of Kevin Curley. Can't find him. I don't know what happened to his program. He probably didn't get funding. But what I can't stomach is the fact that people talk about anger management and batterer treatment. They are not the same. Batterers who beat their significant others, their spouses, their girlfriends, whoever they're supposedly love, need a batterer treatment program, not an anger management, because angry people don't always beat their spouses or their significant others.
Mm-hmm. No, you're exactly right. And I think the thing, too, that people have to understand, you know, when we talk about domestic violence, so many people believe that it is just physical. And, you know, as we're talking, the emotional, the sexual, the verbal, I mean, it goes on.
Psychological, financial.
Absolutely. And
it goes on and on.
It does go on and on. I mean, are you seeing any programs that you're feeling hopeful about?
Yes, I am. And I know some really wonderful people, wonderful programs across the country. One of them is in Schaumburg, Illinois, and it's called Wings. And the executive director, Rebecca Darr, it does an amazing job down in Texas, in Sugar Land, Texas, Fort Bend Women's Center. The executive director, Leslie Wayland, she does an incredible job. I mean, I could go down a list of really incredible organizations and people that do such fabulous work, but it's still a shelter. Why not prevent people from going into these shelters in the first place?
Well, exactly.
Let's make them more preventative. Let's educate. Let's get the awareness out there to these people, to these communities.
And
be it lower income, be it religious, be it very wealthy, be it to all the communities, and continue talking about it every month. October, Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Why only in October?
Yeah, exactly.
Should be talked about every single day of the year.
And this is where the schools and the colleges
yes.
and the universities
yes.
have such an important role. I mean, it's really a no-brainer when you think about it. If you start to teach kids early on, as we did in Montreal, in the first grade, about healthy relationships and how do you express
right.
anger well and what is love. I mean, it's so basic, and yet we seem to continue to wait for the crisis. And
always. And then when a celebrity or somebody gets killed or gets beat up, that's when, oh my God, we have to do something again. What about utilizing the Hands Are Not For Hitting program, which is geared for children
yes.
kindergarten through sixth grade?
Yes.
Hands are not for hitting. Words are not for hurting. My hand will not commit violence. They start in kindergarten. How difficult is it to do that? I did that with so many children when I first started speaking around this country, going into the schools, making murals, keeping it simple for those young minds, and just realizing that, you know what? Hands are not for hitting. They're not for pushing. Feet are not for kicking. And hold these children accountable for their actions if they do it.
Now, in California, near you, how many of these kinds of programs have been implemented in, let's say, the elementary or middle schools, as far as you know?
In Orange County, do you know that after all this stuff happened, it was really kind of an inconvenience for people?
Ah, of course it was an inconvenience.
Yes, because we lived in their neighborhood and the media was not leaving our neighbors alone. So it was a huge inconvenience that the media got involved and they were in people's faces and asking questions and things like that. So I did a majority of my work outside of Orange County, or outside of Southern California, because they honestly didn't like what was happening. And, you know, not until years later did we realize that, you know, it's interesting how we did more work outside of California than we did inside of California. I mean, I learned from a shelter here in California, and my mother and I, we went there, and they started educating me about domestic violence. We even built a playground because we were first a granting organization, and we built a playground named after Nicole at their shelter, and that plaque is still there, and it's absolutely wonderful. And that was Human Options, and they're a fabulous organization. They do a lot of work, and you know what's really great about them is that you see a lot of kids that are just with happy faces and smiling and laughing. And some of these organizations that I've walked into, I mean, they're really depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really sad. And you see, you know, you don't see happy people and you don't see a lot of, you know, things that are positive. And it's really kind of sad.
No, it
but,
is.
You know, and it's attributed also to funding. What can we do? How much can we do here? You know, and do we have the monies to let all these women and children come into our shelter and to actually be able to help them? So if anything, if I can say anything to, you know, your listeners and people that are listening, contact your local congresspeople and get people talking about domestic violence. I mean, it can even be as as easy as putting something in the bathroom. If you're in a domestic violence situation, call this number and they can take off a little tag. You know, just letting people know that organizations exist. Some places, organizations are all out in front. The neighbors watch. The police, law enforcement is there. I mean, they have really a great community support. Some have to stay private. Some can't even let people know where they are. And it just depends on what kind of community you live in. But there are little things that every single individual can do.
Such as?
Such as contacting that shelter and asking them what it is they need for their community.
Okay.
You know, oftentimes they need diapers. Diapers is like it's always huge on the list. You know, you can get diapers for them. Things. I mean, women and children run with the clothing on their back.
Exactly.
They may have a black bag that they run out of the house with when they can, if they can, and that's all they have. So just little things like just diapers or just like, you know, something to brush your teeth with, because they just don't grab any of that stuff. You're just running for your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, 26 years later, people are still running for their lives. How sad is that?
But, you know, if research is correct, and I think that I've had some debates with women about this, I think that if we are waiting for the men to change, may have to wait a very long time. And this is where, you know, I go on and on about the importance of relationship education early on, so that somebody has clarity. Maybe the men don't have clarity, maybe some do, but that at least the women have clarity about what a healthy relationship is and is not. I mean, you look at our first lady here. Of course, she's not my first lady, but Melania Trump. I mean, here is a woman who, in my view, is in a very emotionally abusive relationship, as was Hillary Clinton. Okay, so these women, I think, maybe role models for a lot of women around the world and in this country. And yet, look at and I use the word abuse. Look at the emotional abuse. If we're talking about Melania Trump, that she has agreed to sustain, right? In her marriage.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I just, like I said, you know, it stems across all socioeconomic boundaries. And I think that if we educate these girls when they're young on what it is a healthy relationship looks like, I think we're much better off. I went to a community and they bust in 8 classes. Girls and boys.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really great because they were young. They were in the 5th and 6th grade, 7th grade, and it was wonderful. They asked questions, they understood, and I could sit there on the stage and I could look out and I could see the look on these children's eyes and in their faces of who understood what I was talking about and who was possibly in a situation like that. And the funny thing is that I was right. Not funny, ha-ha, but funny.
Right.
That they came up to me after I got done talking, and they said, I know exactly what you're talking about because I'm living it, or my friend is living it. And what do we do? So, yes, I truly believe that the younger we start, the better off, the more education they're going to have, the more knowledge they're going to have about healthy relationships, so that when they get older, they will realize exactly what those relationships are. I think our unified school districts, they don't have a lot of funding for this, but I think that that is something that our congressmen and women should actually think about, because that is when you need to start. That is when they are, you know, I mean, a lot of times in elementary school, you got these bigger kids. They
absolutely
turn into bullies. It's like, wait a minute, you know, that's not acceptable. Being a bully is not acceptable. So I think they need to find some funding to educate these kids while they are young so that they can grow up in healthy relationships, and they can understand that bullying is not okay, verbal abuse is not okay, emotional abuse is not okay, cyberbullying is definitely not okay.
Right.
None of it is okay. And if our states really would come together and say, you know what, let's put a program together, let's get people in there to these schools, let's get these unified school districts together, let's give them some money so they can actually have these assemblies to teach these children and have people go in there, I think we'd be much better off in the long run, and we would have healthier relationships for our children.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think I had mentioned to you that when I lived in Florida, Governor Bush had appointed me to the Florida State Commission on Marriage.
Right.
And
yeah.
The hope was, and I was very naive about politics, it had been my first entree into the whole political scene, the idea was to implement my relationship education program into the schools and into the high schools, into the middle schools, and into the colleges. So I mm-hmm. had an opportunity, as I had mentioned to you. I met with everybody. I met with all the major decision makers in the state of Florida for a 2-year period. And mm-hmm. what happened was, the reality, Denise, was that nobody cared at all. And that was really
That's
my takeaway.
So
the guidance counselors cared, and the teachers who I would speak to, you know, around the state from various different schools, they seemed to be concerned. But when it came to people who had a position to be able to fund some programs, and I might say for my own program, funding was really not so much of an issue. It was the lack of concern and the lack of real caring that really struck me. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I mean, here I was talking with domestic violence people, social service people, educational people, and when push came to shove, nothing happened.
Was done. Yeah, well, there you go. Okay, they want the money for something else.
Absolutely.
But what they don't realize is that these children are our future. These children will be the president of the United States. These children will be, you know, the heads of corporations that will change the world. They will be, you know, they will be the next generation of Congress people and you know, top leaders. So why wouldn't we want them healthy?
Well, that's a very good.
What the unhealthy is bringing us?
It's a very good question.
What's the unhealthy bringing us?
Exactly.
Nothing.
Well, it's bringing us 16 million adults in the United States. 1 in 5 Americans are suffering from depression. 40 million adults suffering from a variety of different, you know, anxiety disorders. We have the, I was talking about before you came on the line about the suicide rates for young children. Denise, the suicide attempts by young people quadrupled over the past 6 years. Kids 10 to 24, there's been a suicide increase in kids 10 to 24. I mean, happy kids don't want to commit suicide. What is going on? What activities these days? I mean, your family and your sister, Bri, they must be so proud of you. And what would Nicole say if she, you know, if she knew?
Who knows? But you know what? If this was turned around, I know she'd be out here doing the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I know. And, you know, I mean, we've always been really close. And that is just one thing that, you know, even if it's not you in the domestic violence situation, but educate yourself so that you can see what is going on with, say, your sister or, you know, your best friend. I went to a college and spoke, and it was really interesting because there was a young boy who asked me, he says, Denise, he goes, what do I do? My sister's in a situation like this. I said, you know, I said, the best thing you can do is educate yourself. Mm-hmm. Educate yourself on the cycle of domestic violence, the power and control of one human being over another, the verbal, the emotional, the psychological abuse escalates into the physical, the hitting, the kicking, the punching, all of that, throwing up against walls. And then there's the honeymoon phase of, oh, baby, I'm so sorry. It's never going to happen again.
Right.
The gifts, the flower, the excuses. But that's the cycle of violence, and it all boils down to one thing, power and control of one human being over another. I said, if you can educate yourself on that, and then you can sit your sister down, and you can talk to her, and you can let her know what you know and what you have learned, and that you don't want to end up like Nicole, maybe you can get through to her. I said, but don't just sit there and go, you got to leave, you got to go. Be there, be supportive. Be there for that friend or that loved one or whoever you are talking about. But educate yourself. It may not be happening with you, but educate yourself.
And what did he say?
He says, I will. He said, I will. Uh-huh. He goes, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Because once you know something, you know, like I didn't know anything about domestic violence 26 years ago. But once I started educating myself about domestic violence, I mean, I was just as naive at the beginning. It's like, oh, okay, we're going to start the foundation and domestic violence is going to be gone. Further from the truth, you know, domestic violence still exists in horrific proportions, and it will continue until we are educated about domestic violence and we can educate our young so that they don't take it into their future and they don't take it to their children and their children's children, but the cycle of violence needs to be broken.
Are you speaking on an ongoing basis around the country these days? Are you still as involved?
I speak whenever anybody wants to listen, but I have started a new business, which is the Elite Speakers International, which is a speakers bureau of many different speakers.
Including
you, exactly,
right.
And that speak about domestic violence, sexual assault. I have law enforcement, suicide prevention, mental health. So I've got all the cause-related issues, topics that are hard to hear, that
yes.
people don't necessarily want to talk about, but
right.
this is what my bureau is all about. It is all cause-related, and all the issues that, you know, people don't want to discuss, we have speakers for every single one of those issues. And, you know, I mean, we're here and we do a lot of great work, and these speakers are incredible speakers that do a lot of fabulous work, such as yourself, you know. I mean, you want to get people educated, and that's what our speakers want to do. They want to educate, they want to help. It's what they do, and it's their lifelong calling, and, you know, they are professionals at what it is that they do. And, you know, I try to get the best of the best I do my best to get them out there and get them speaking. And I can give you the website if you like.
Absolutely. I was just about to ask.
Okay. It's Elite Speakers with an S, mm-hmm. Euro. No, EliteSpeakersInternational.com.
Okay. Listen, Denise, it has been a pleasure and an honor to connect with you on the Ask Beatty Show. We need to continue the conversations. I would like to also be speaking more around the country. I mean, I've really, really found that the stopping it before it starts, that people have a clear, clear idea that they're, first
yes.
of all, that they're in a good place, that they have clarity about what a healthy relationship is and is not, so that when the abuse of various different kinds start to surface, that you have lights that kind of go off in your head and you say, hey, this is not yeah. okay. This is not okay. And if I need help in
exactly.
getting out before, you know, women end up, you know, like your sister did. Well, listen, again, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Let me just give you the 800 24-hour domestic
okay.
violence hotline.
Absolutely.
1-800-799-SAFE.
Okay.
7233, 1-800-799-SAFE, and that nationwide.
Yes,
that is domestic violence organizations.
Yes. Thank you so much again. We'll be in touch. To be continued. You're doing some amazing, amazing work. And hopefully, you know, in the next few years, we're going to be able to have a conversation and say, you know what? The statistics are going down. I mean, that's our hope. That's our dream.
Awesome.
It certainly would. Okay. Enjoy the rest of the day, and we'll talk soon. Thank you so much. Well, that was Denise Brown. And Denise Brown, of course, was Nicole Brown Simpson's sister. And it is 26 years ago that Nicole suffered at the hands of her husband, OJ. And, you know, the thing that was so depressing about the whole situation, of course, other than the fact that she was murdered, was that OJ was, he was acquitted. He was acquitted on the two counts of murder on October 3rd, 1995. So she was killed in June of 1994. And look, OJ Simpson, he had the dream team, and he walked. So I think what's really, really important is that people understand that domestic violence, it is a wolf fill. So when someone says, oh, well, I didn't know what I was doing, you know, that's just simply not the case. That domestic violence is a willful behavior, emotional, psychological, physical, or sexual, that one person in an intimate relationship uses in order to control the other. And we have to remember that it takes many different forms and includes behaviors such as threats, name calling, preventing contact with family or friends, withholding money, actual or threatened physical harm and sexual assault. And stalking can also be a form of domestic violence, and also on the computer. And remember that most domestic violence is committed against women by their male partners or ex-partners. And it also occurs in lesbian and gay relationships and is common in teenage dating relationships as well. I mean, the statistics now for teenage dating abuse, I mean, it's the numbers are going up. And this is where, and Denise Brown and I, we agree that preventative relationship education is key if we are ever going to really be able to change the trajectory of how relationships are playing out, and if we're ever going to be able to change what's going on in the world of domestic violence. So for those of you who are listening right now, and you may wonder whether or not you are in an abusive relationship, there's a couple of things, or things that you need to ponder and consider. Does your partner constantly criticize you and your abilities as a spouse or partner, parent or employee? Does your partner behave in an overprotective manner or become extremely jealous or threaten to hurt you or your children or your pets or family members or friends or even themselves, or prevent you from seeing family or friends, or gets suddenly angry or loses their temper or destroys personal property or throws things around, or may deny you access to family assets like bank accounts or credit cards of the car, or control all finances? Remember, this is about power and control. Or withhold medication, or deny you access to health care, or force you to work in jobs not of your choosing, may use intimidation or manipulation to control you or your children. And on the physical side, will hit, punch, slap, kick, shove, choke, or bite you, or prevent you from going where you want to, when you want to, and with whomever you want to, or makes you have sex when you don't want to, or do things sexually that you don't want to do, or humiliates or embarrasses you in front of other people. And I think that we have to be very, very honest with ourselves. You know, I hear many, many women, and I've treated many women who've been victims of domestic violence abuse. They'll tell me, but I love him. But I love him. But you have to understand, and this is an educational learning curve that we all need to take, that love is not abuse. We can have arguments in our relationships. We can disagree in our relationships. We can have ups and downs in our relationships. But the kinds of behaviors that I am describing are absolutely always, always unacceptable. If you feel afraid, if you feel scared, if you don't feel that you're able to express your opinion, because you're concerned about what the consequences are going to be, you need to really take a very, very honest look. You need to take a very, very honest look at your relationship and what you are doing and how, of course, you can get some help so that you're going to be able to exit and extricate a relationship that could ultimately end up killing you. So these are things, these are not sexy things, these are not fun things, these are not pretty things that we're talking about. But I think that education is absolutely key. And if you're not sure, you can always leave messages for me on the Progressive Radio Network voicemail. That number is 862-800-6805.